The difference between territory and hierarchy. How can we tell if our orientation is territorial or hierarchical? One way is to ask ourselves, if I were feeling really anxious, what would I do? If we would pick up the phone and call 6 friends, one after the other, with the aim of hearing their voices and reassuring ourselves that they still love us, we're operating hierarchically. We're seeking the good opinion of others. What would Arnold Schwarzenegger do on a freaky day? He wouldn't phone his buddies, he'd head for the gym. He wouldn't care if the place was empty, if he didn't say a word to a soul. He knows that working out all by itself is enough to bring him back to his center. His orientation is territorial. Here's another test. Of any activity you do, ask yourself, if I were the last person on Earth, would I still do it? If you're all alone on the planet, a hierarchical orientation makes no sense. There's no one to impress. So if you'd still pursue that activity, congratulations, you're doing it territorially. If Arnold Schwarzenegger were the last man on Earth, he'd still go to the gym. Stevie Wonder would still pound the piano. The sustenance they get comes from the act itself, not from the impression it makes on others. I have a friend who's nuts for clothes. If she were the last woman on Earth, she would shoot straight to Givenchy or Saint Laurent, smash her way in, and start pillaging. In her case, it wouldn't be to impress others. She just loves clothes. That's her territory. Now, what about ourselves as artists? How do we do our work, hierarchically or territorially? If we were freaked out, would we go there first? If we were the last person on Earth, would we still show up at the studio? The rehearsal hall? The laboratory? The supreme virtue. Someone once asked the Spartan king, Leonidas, to identify the supreme warrior virtue from which all others flowed. He replied, contempt for death. For us, as artists, read, failure. Contempt for failure is our cardinal virtue. By confining our attention territorially to our own thoughts and actions, in other words, to the work and its demands, we cut the earth from beneath the blue-painted, shield-banging, spear-brandishing foe. The fruits of our labor. When Krishna instructed Arjuna that we have a right to our labor, but not to the fruits of our labor, he was counseling the warrior to act territorially, not hierarchically. We must do our work for its own sake, not for fortune or attention or applause. Then there's the third way proffered by the Lord of Discipline, which is beyond both hierarchy and territory. That is to do the work and give it to him. Do it as an offering to God. Give the act to me, purged of hope and ego, fix your attention on the soul, act and do for me. The work comes from heaven anyway, why not give it back? To labor in this way, the Bhagavad Gita tells us, is a form of meditation and a supreme species of spiritual devotion. It also, I believe, conforms most closely to higher reality. In fact, we are servants of the mystery. We were put here on earth to act as agents of the infinite, to bring into existence that which is not yet, but which will be through us. Every breath we take, every heartbeat, every evolution of every cell comes from God and is sustained by God every second, just as every creation, invention, every bar of music or line of verse, every thought, vision, fantasy, every dumbass flop and stroke of genius comes from that infinite intelligence that created us and the universe in all its dimensions out of the void, the field of infinite potential, primal chaos, the muse. To acknowledge that reality, to efface all ego, to let the work come through us and give it back freely to its source, that, in my opinion, is as true to reality as it gets. Portrait of the Artist. In the end, we arrive at a kind of model of the artist's world, and that model is that there exist other higher planes of reality about which we can prove nothing, but from which arise our lives, our work, and our art. These spheres are trying to communicate with ours. When Blake said eternity is in love with the creations of time, he was referring to those planes of pure potential which are timeless, placeless, spaceless, but which long to bring their visions into being here in this time-bound, space-defined world. The artist is the servant of that intention, those angels, that muse. The enemy of the artist is the small-time ego, which begets resistance, which is the dragon that guards the gold. That's why an artist must be a warrior, and, like all warriors, artists over time acquire modesty and humility. They may, some of them, conduct themselves flamboyantly in public, but alone with the work, they are chaste and humble. They know they are not the source of the creations they bring into being. They only facilitate, they carry. They are the willing and skilled instruments of the gods and goddesses they serve. The artist's life. Are you a born writer? Were you put on earth to be a painter, a scientist, an apostle of peace? In the end, the question can only be answered by action. Do it or don't do it. It may help to think of it this way. If you are meant to cure cancer, or write a symphony, or crack cold fusion, and you don't do it, you not only hurt yourself, even destroy yourself, you hurt your children. You hurt me. You hurt the planet. You shame the angels who watch over you, and you spite the Almighty who created you and only you with your unique gifts for the sole purpose of nudging the human race 1 millimeter farther along its path back to God. Creative work is not a selfish act or a bid for attention on the part of the actor. It's a gift to the world and every being in it. Don't cheat us of your contribution. Give us what you've got.
The End. You've been listening to The War of Art, Winning the Inner Creative Battle, by Stephen Pressfield, narrated by George Guidel. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends the novel Gates of Fire, also by Stephen Pressfield and narrated by George Guidel, and Telling Lies for Fun and Profit, a manual for fiction writers, both written and narrated by Lawrence Block. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So to order another recorded book, or for a copy of our latest listing, please call us using the toll-free number found on the back of the book. You can order by phone with any major credit card, or by writing to us, or by faxing us. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. On our website, you can browse the catalog, hear about the latest releases, place orders, or tune into narrator profiles and author interviews. So visit us there at www.recordedbooks.com. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.